All right. Good afternoon. I mean that as sincerely as possible. After the morning and the midday and the early afternoon, it is 2:05 p.m. Calling State Affairs to order. Members present, Representatives Tarr, Kaufman, Eastman, Story, myself, Chair Christ Tompkins, 5 members present, a quorum to conduct business. Thanks to Sophia, who's working remotely in House Records, as well as our moderator and our pinch-hitting committee aide, Clara Gross, for helping facilitate today's meeting. I'm going to announce a number of amendment deadlines, and these will also be email communicated, and I think sort of per normal custom, if these are too tight or not going to work with what you have in mind, let me know, and we can try to be flexible to that. And for House Bill 226, pay increases for state attorneys, 7 p.m. submission to Legislative Legal this coming Tuesday, and submit to my office Wednesday at 5 p.m. For House Bill 251, relating to Board of Trustees for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corp., same set of deadlines, submit to Legal 7 p.m. on Tuesday and submit to my office Wednesday at 5 p.m. And then finally, I'll potentially take up this next one at another time. But those two I want to get out there, and we'll see how everything else goes. We have 2 items on today's agenda. I think these can be maybe on the more abbreviated side of things for first bill hearings. Senate Bill 161 from Senator Wielkowski relating to political party affiliation, and then a piece of committee legislation, which all members have seen when it was in work draft form before the legislation was introduced. This is House Bill 412 relating to Perm Fund Corp and ADA Board legislative confirmation. So we'll take it in that order. And for Senate Bill 161, we have Senator Wielkowski and staff, Senator Wielkowski, David Dunsmore, in the room. And when you're ready, please come forward and present the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I know you're had a very busy day. I'll keep this quick. This bill, for the record, Bill Wielkowski, State Senator representing East Anchorage and Jaybird. With me is David Dunsmore on my staff. This bill was brought to me by a constituent who is very active in the Libertarian Party. And under current law, in order to be recognized by the state as an official political party, a party needs to get at least 3% of the total votes cast for governor in the last election. If there's no governor's race, then it's for U.S. Senator. If there's no U.S. Senator race, then for House of Representatives, depending on which one is on the ballot. The problem is that this threshold can vary quite a bit from election to election, and you have a chart in your folders that you can look at, and as you can see, it's varied from in 2010 less than 8,000 to 2020 it was roughly around 11,000. This past election there was a 27% increase in the number that was required in the number, because it was a very high turnout election. With the passage of Ballot Measure 2, official party status will no longer be needed to determine ballot access for state candidates. However, there are some benefits which my staff can talk about to being an officially recognized party. This bill would simplify the process, set an easily verifiable and consistent number to recognize political parties, and as having more than 5,000 registered voters. We've had the support, we've heard from the Libertarian Party, they support this, the Constitution Party, my staff has reached out, they've indicated they support this, and the Green Party, which has indicated they support this. I don't know of any opposition to it. It does, has no fiscal note, and would actually probably save the Division of Elections a little bit of money, because they would not have to go through the time and expense to review petitions for recognition. So stop right there, happy to answer any questions, and my staff, David, can talk a little bit more in detail if people have would like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator, and let the record reflect Representative Vance joined us at 2:08 p.m. Maybe a couple of questions from the committee. We'll go to Mr. Dunsmore for some greater detail. Representative Story, do you have a question?
Sure. Thank you, Coach. Thank you, Chair Price Tompkins, and welcome. Good to see both of you here today. It does seem like efficient saving time and also having choice on the ballot. I'm just wondering, have you had a chance, very simple question, to talk to the Division of Elections and have they given you any feedback on it?
Through the chair, Representative Story, we informed the Division of Elections that we were introducing this, and we haven't received any comment other than the fiscal note they provided.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. You spoke to the fact that this status gives the members of the party or the party itself special benefits, and I'm just wondering, before there was this argument that we wouldn't want to recognize too many political parties because then they would have ballot access. We'd have long and, unwieldy ballots. Now that that argument is no longer the case with ballot measure 2, why wouldn't we afford, these special benefits to, any group that wants to be a party, even if it's, 100 voters? Why should it have to be 5,000?
Thank you, Representative, through the chair. That's a policy call. And the number 5,000 was the number that was brought to us, that was requested by my constituent. It could be 1,000, could be 10,000, it could be 100. I think the idea is you want to set some sort of a limit so that you have, and let me just talk about the benefits, not huge benefits, but in addition to presidential ballot access, recognized parties have the right to purchase 2 pages in the official election pamphlet, the right to nominate poll workers and election board members, and the right to have observers present at polling places and counting centers. So, and there's also different campaign finance limits and reporting limits for recognized parties. So I think if you opened it up and you had, say, 100 different parties, I could foresee problems with the size of the election pamphlet, the right to nominate poll workers. You could have all of a sudden at election polling places, a whole lot more poll workers, a whole lot more election board members. So I think there's a chance you run into some logistical problems just in terms of how you run elections, as opposed to having some sort of baseline that shows that you have some recognition, some sort of support within the state.
So we currently have a process where you become a political group, and then if you reach a certain number of voters, you're officially recognized as a party. How many political groups do we have that are competing to try and become official parties? I thought it was a lot smaller than 100.
I'll turn to David.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, if the committee gives me a couple minutes, I can pull the exact number up, but I believe it's in the 8 to 12 range.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, kind of the similar thinking with the 5,000 person number. Of course, if we set that in statute, then we'll have to change the law when we want to change that number as, say, population increases. Did you consider any kind of like sunset or prescriptive kind of review of that? Because I know we've been on the decline over the last few years, but typically we've had a little bit of population increase, and I'm just wondering if you thought about that a little bit, or do we just feel comfortable that, the next time this needs to be addressed, we can change it legislatively?
That was a mistake on my part not to reference the change that was made actually on the Senate side in the Senate Judiciary Committee, I believe, where they actually did change it to adjust every 10 years to look at the numbers and then to adjust it up or down, rounding it within 500 voters.
Thank you. I missed that. Apologies.
Any additional questions? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Now, you've got registered voters in the state as your benchmark, and it would seem to me, just based on the fact that we've got registered voters, you know, more than 100% of the population, I think it was called out in the last election. What about, you know, some other benchmark that might more accurately reflect either active voters or voters that have voted in some previous election or indicated an interest in voting in a future election? I know we have folks that, you know, aren't in the state anymore and they're on the list. We got folks that don't want to register to vote, but they got a list through the PFD. It just seems to me that, you know, benchmarking against registered voters might not be the best metric.
Well, through the chair, Representative Eastman, prior to ballot measure two, there were two ways in which a party could attain status. They could either have it through registered voters or by securing the 3% threshold in that top of the ticket election. The voters through ballot measure two decided to change that to just the registered voter qualification. As a practical matter, I think there are, I don't think you would see parties achieving recognized status through this threshold through inactive voters. Because if you look at every month, the Division of Elections updates the voter rolls, and some of the parties that had historically been more active but are not recently, they tend to shrink a little bit every time. So I don't think, as a practical matter, narrowing the pool of voters the calculation would come out of would yield a particularly different result. And this just makes it a simple number that anyone can go and look at that monthly report of Division of Elections, how many voters for each party, and see how close they are to that $5,000 number or 5,000 voter number.
Additional questions for the sponsor? And Mr. Dunsmore, did you have any further analysis that would be helpful to present?
Mr. Chairman, not unless the committee desires.
Well, I like legislation that makes our body of law shorter and simpler, and this bill accomplishes that. Great. Well, we'll set this legislation aside and be in touch about a possible amendment deadline and noticing it for an additional hearing. Thank you very much, Senator,
for
being here, especially on the sort of uncertain timing of things today. That takes us to the next item on today's agenda, which is House Bill 412. Relating to Perm Fund Corporation and ADA Board legislative confirmation. I spoke to this a little bit initially, but here to present the legislation, although I think all members are familiar, is Zaini Borseth in my office. Welcome, Ms. Borseth. I also will note that Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal is online and available for questions as well. But Ms. Borseth, if you can just give us a quick primer on the legislation and the sectional. We can go from there.
Absolutely. Thank you all for putting this bill forward and thinking about it. So I'm Zaini Borseth, staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. This bill amends four different sections of statute. Three of those sections, 37, 13, 50, 60, and 70, create membership of the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The fourth section, 44-88-30, creates membership of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, ADA. So section one of HB 412 requires the four public members appointed to the board of APFC to be separately confirmed by a majority of the members of the legislature in joint session. Section two requires the public members reappointed to the board of APFC to be confirmed by the majority of the members of the legislature in joint session. Section 3 requires that if a vacancy on the board of APFC occurs, the governor's new appointee shall be confirmed by the majority in joint session. So if this vacancy occurs while the legislature is not in session, the interim appointee shall exercise the powers of the board member until they are confirmed by the majority in the next joint session. Section 4 requires the 5 public members appointed to the Board of ADA to be confirmed by a majority in the next joint session. And Section 5 addresses 4 matters of applicability. So, one, it says this act does not apply to members of the Board of Trustees of APFC before the effective date. 2, it says that after the effective date, members of the Board of APFC who are reappointed shall be confirmed by a majority of the members of the legislature in joint session. 3, it says that this act does not apply to members of ADA who are serving on the effective date of this act. And finally, board means the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Currently, the effective date is January 1st, 2023. And that is kind of the broad overview. Happy to answer any questions or defer to Ledge Legal.
And I'll just note, per communication with a member of the committee, I think I will probably put forward an amendment to adjust the effective date of this legislation to be earlier, so prior to when this current gubernatorial term ends, which would obviate any potential hijinks. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on, in Section 3 that talks about if a vacancy occurs when the legislature is not in session and the wording says the governor may appoint an interim board member. And so that obviously opens up that he may or she may not appoint. And just asking if this is something that the committee wants to address to clarify, you know, is it our intent that we for sure want an appointment made within 30 days, for instance, so that there is a full board? You know, I think some clarification would be helpful so that there's not the ambiguity that no appointment be made until the following year and the board is kind of left without, you know, with a seat empty. I think that's something that we've addressed in these past couple of years that has created a lot of consternation. So I'd love to have some thoughts from the committee on how we can proceed with this section.
Thank you. That's noted, Representative Vance. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I'm looking at the word promptly on line 8 of page 2, where the current statute, we're not changing that part, says a vacancy in the board shall be filled promptly by the by appointment by the governor, and then we add the language of confirmation by a majority of members of the legislature joint session. I'm just wondering two things. One, the promptly obviously refers to the governor and his making the appointment. Does the promptly also refer to the confirmation? Sometimes we wait until, gosh, so dang late in the session to do the confirmations, and then it's like, well, are we going to forget? You know, if we have COVID or something happens, you know, it just doesn't happen or things like that. You know, if there's a way we could nudge the legislature into maybe being a little bit more prompt, particularly since we're asking the governor to do that. And then the second question is, I wonder if that word promptly would maybe resolve some of that question, because it does say he may, but then above it, it says, you know, it shall be promptly filled. Maybe that's may is more of a, you know, do it quickly than a maybe if you don't want to.
Good comments. I wonder if what the proper nudges would be for the legislature to change its normal course of business and sessions vis-a-vis confirmations, but adverbs wouldn't hurt. Additional comments or questions? Oh, Representative Eastman, forgive me.
So just since, you know, we are dealing with the two different organizations here in the bill, we are specifically calling out reappointment when we're talking about the Permanent Fund Board. Is the same process being followed by the other organization, or is there a difference there? Only because we're not really calling it out, and I don't know enough about you know, their process as it stands today.
This relates to ADA?
Yeah.
Ms. Borsa?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Eastman. Representative Story had a similar question earlier on in correspondence, and it's because there are three sections in statute that apply to APFC. Can I say that right? And so one of those sections directly addresses reappointment, and so that's why in that applicability, Part B speaks to the reappointment. However, there's no section in the ADA part of statute that directly speaks to reappointment of members. So adding it into this bill would also be adding it for the first time into statute surrounding ADA. So will of the committee of whether you want something to address reappointment.
Well, and is there a current process, is it broad enough to encompass some of the same actions that we're looking at with regard to the permit fund board, or do they just have a different way of doing things?
That, through the chair, Representative Easton, that is a good question. I might defer to Emily Nauman.
Ms. Nauman?
Hi, for the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services. The ADA statutes are silent as to reappointment. Danny was correct in that description, but there's no statute that prohibits a member of ADA from being reappointed, so I presume that the process would work the same as it does for APFC.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, I will be in touch about next hearing date and possible amendment deadline on this legislation. I'm aware that this subject matter is also in two other pieces of legislation we've already heard, so I know it's been socialized with the committee, and I think I've communicated this before, but the idea is that this is sort of a skinny vehicle that sort of optimizes for consensus. And so we'll be in touch as far as next steps on this legislation. So at 2:27, we achieved our goal of an expedited meeting, and we will promptly adjourn. Thank you, Zanny and Claire and everyone else who facilitated this meeting, and we are adjourned.